Today's gospel comes near the beginning of the 21st chapter of the Gospel of St. Luke. Any time I hear these verses, I can't help but think of the four verses that begin the chapter and come right before today's gospel passage. We think of the two passages side by side, they give us a pretty striking contrast. The first four verses relate an image that would be familiar to us. It tells the story of the poor widow who tosses two small coins into the temple treasury. The Greek word that describes the coins suggests that they were the smallest coins in circulation. So it would be like a contribution of pennies, you might think, in our own day. So in a way, by most accounts, it doesn't seem to be a terribly significant gesture. And yet, in these four verses, the Lord is really captivated by this woman. It's almost unprecedented in the Gospels, the way that he responds to her. He's so fascinated that he even tells the disciples, look at her, look at what's taking place, as if to say, this is the Gospel being revealed before you. What makes it even more fascinating is this poor widow has no idea what's taking place. She doesn't know that the Lord is watching her and that he's studying what she's doing. So it speaks in a way to the reality that God is enormously attentive and deeply invested in our lives in a way that we don't always register. Sometimes we don't even appreciate the subtlety of our lives the way that God does. One of the powerful little tidbits of that passage is that in English, what the woman does with the coins is described as she puts them in a temple treasury. But the Greek word is she throws, which is a much bolder, stronger gesture. And it's a bit poetic. It kind of reveals something that's taking place because, in a way, the woman is casting herself, her very livelihood, into this very small gesture that's very important to God. She's abandoning herself, in a sense, to what she's doing. It reminds me of a line from Mother Teresa. I've mentioned this line before, but it's very striking. She says, "Conviction comes at the moment of abandonment." The natural order would seem to suggest that conviction comes first, and then one is duly prepared to abandon, to make an offering of their lives. But the supernatural insight from Mother Teresa is that they happen almost simultaneously. It's when one abandons oneself to the will of God that the conviction comes, this is what I was supposed to do. It's when one takes the leap of faith that the certainty arrives, not a moment sooner, that this is what God had in mind. As I think of Christ watching this woman who's completely unaware, there's also a part of me that wonders, does he see in her a reflection of his own life? Because in the next chapter, chapter 22, his passion will begin. His passion is imminent in this very moment. So when he sees her abandoning herself in this gesture, does he somehow think this is a reflection of what's taking place in my life that's being poured out like an oblation that's being offered to the Father for our sake? Who knows? It's not an answer to this question, but it's fascinating to reflect on it. In any case, thinking of her, this poor widow, is helpful, I think, in terms of thinking of today's gospel. Christ finds himself in the shadow of the Temple of Jerusalem, which the day of him saying these words would be regarded as a permanent, absolute, fixed point of reference. Something that's not going anywhere, and it's overwhelmingly significant. And yet, in the year 70, the temple would be destroyed. So we think of the widow and the temple. It's striking, then, that the poor widow is immortalized. She's destined to be remembered throughout the history of the church because of this relatively anonymous deed. And yet the temple itself is something that will pass in a matter of years, even though it seems all-powerful. Thinking of the two, study of contrast, can surface some questions in our minds and hearts. What lasts in life? Ultimately, what endures? What remains? And what is passing? What's fleeting? What's destined to come and go? We think of this as a meditation that we might make. I'd like to offer two little Latin phrases that I think can help us to differentiate the two. And they both require a little bit of explanation. First comes from a coronation rite that took place when popes were elected It began at least in the 1500s, but it ended in the 1950s. I've never seen this take place, never seen a video, just heard about it. And part of what took place was that the new elected pope would be placed in a seat, a chair of honor, and then elevated, and people would carry him throughout the plaza of St. Peter's. He would give his new papal blessing to the crowd. But there was this little built-in gesture that was kind of a check on the moment, and it involved a priest who carried flax that was burning. I have no idea what this looks like. That's just how it's described. And at three points, the procession would stop, and the priest had a speaking part. It was only in one line, but he said it at each three times that the procession stopped. He said four words in Latin: Sic transit gloria mundi. Sic transit gloria mundi. Thus the glory of the world passes. Thus the glory of the world passes. Kind of a neat little line. And it's supposed to, in a way, represent a warning, in a sense, that for all the wonder of the celebration, all the goodness of the moment, all earthly privilege and honor is fleeting. It doesn't last. It comes and it goes. Something of a reminder, not just to the Pope, but to all of us. The second line is something that comes from our friends, the Carthusians. This is a religious contemplative order. They were founded at the end of the 11th century, and they have a five-word motto from their founder, Saint Bruno. And the motto is, Stat crux dum volvitur orbis. Stat crux dum volvitur orbis. The cross stands firm while the world turns. The cross stands firm while the world turns. Fascinating to reflect on what this means in light of the world. Very simple expression, but a deep truth being revealed. It's a timely message, these five words, because next weekend we'll celebrate the solemnity of Christ the King. The season of ordinary time will come to a close, and the gospel that we hear next weekend comes from Luke chapter 23, which is the crucifixion. So it's neat to think of these lines as a way of preparing for what we hear next weekend. I think this all comes together because we're nearing the end of ordinary time. When we get to the end of a significant step in life, inevitably it's good for us to turn around, look at where we've come, the journey that we've been on. Ordinary time began back in the middle of January. A lot's taken place since then. It doesn't seem like that long ago, the grand scheme, January of 2019, but here we are. This season of ordinary time is drawing to a close. It began with Christ's baptism, his first miracle at the wedding feast of Cana. Along the way, we've been journeying with him. We've heard some of his most famous sermons in Luke's gospel. We've seen some of his dramatic, miraculous healings. We've heard some of the wonderful stories that he tells. We've heard some of his parables. And here we are with Christ on the doorstep of his own passion in Jerusalem. This journey, we've been with him, traveling in his company. In a way, ordinary time is making to us the recommendation that all of life is a way, a manner of journeying with Christ from the very beginning until whenever this life ends. We're somehow along the journey. We know where we've been, but we don't know exactly where the path will lead ultimately. But we know, regardless, we're in Christ's company. Ultimately, being in his presence, being beside him, is the best way that we can learn the lesson of what is fleeting in life, what is passing, and what is absolute, what is permanent, and what lasts for all eternity.